It is time for yet another fascinating, and I'm sure it's going to be thoroughly interesting because we're talking about a very specific place here, episode of the podcast party's Africanalysis, which is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. And as always, we're joined by the repository of knowledge in human form, that is Jean-Jacques Cornish. JJ, how are you?
I'm immensely well, Gareth. I was good. Fearful that I might have heard suppository there, and it would have made my eyeballs pop.
No, definitely a repository of knowledge, not a suppository of knowledge. Although I think there are probably a few people who listen to Africanalysis that feel like sometimes we give them a suppository of knowledge. Either way, it's all for their health and their general goodwill and the understanding of this very complicated continent of ours. Today's subject really is something that I'm personally quite fascinated in and by. It's not really a part of the continent. It's actually an island, a quite substantial island off the coast of Africa. But more and more, I see it coming up in the news. We've spoken about it a number of times on Africanalysis. I'm talking about Madagascar.
You know, Gareth, over the years, I've been blessed to be covering Africa, alternating between hope and despair. And Madagascar is one of those places. The question so often asked is, where would you go? Where would you go spend your own money to go there? Or the other question is, where would you take your wife to? And Madagascar certainly must number right at the top. It's a remarkable country and absolutely amazing. I've been there several times as an election observer. So, you know, sad to see what has happened and some shocking things, effectively. But it's really amazing. Madagascar, the fourth largest island in the world, and it's off the African coast, the sort of southeast African coast. The question, and it broke away, I mean, from the Pangaea, from that large supercontinent, 155 million years ago. So we're going back a bit today, you know, but I think I'll fast forward some of that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that's quite a long time ago, even for someone as aged as you.
Charming, absolutely charming. Thank you ever so much. Well, it was first settled by the Malayans, you know, and effectively, and the first written history from Madagascar is in the 7th century. Now, interestingly, the Arabs got there at the same time as the Portuguese. And this was Diego Dias, whose ships separated from the Indian fleet going to India, and he then spotted Madagascar. So they've been there for some time. Now, it's funny, the Malagasies do not consider, or did not over the years, consider themselves Africans. And because of their French colonial past, they associated with and did business with the West African Francophone nations. Interesting that. But here we have, since independence from France in 1960, they've been subject to a number of coups, disputed elections, violent unrest, and that has held back Madagascar tremendously. You know, why, you ask yourself, when you see Mauritius is probably the most, the wealthiest country per capita, certainly in SADC, and one of the wealthiest in Africa. Why did that happen when Madagascar and the Comores both are relatively poor? In fact, Madagascar is one of the poorest countries on the planet. 75% of its 30 million people live below the poverty line. And 75 to even 80%. They have terrible malnutrition, and they have, child malnutrition, 9% in 2021, but gone up to 36% in 2023. They do have the most diverse ecological system, and they have something like 24 animals that are unique to Madagascar. But there's a real problem with that. The species, the lemurs particularly, 96% of those, that's 103 of the 107 species, are facing extinction, and that's because of loss of habitat, deforestation, illegal pet trade as well, taking a number of them. But the Malagasy never killed them because they believed that they were a sort of humans that had returned by incarnation. So it's quite, you know, they're very, very beautiful to see. And I mean, if you are halfway interested, you need to get there fairly quickly because they are disappearing. Very sad.
Before you carry on, a lot of South Africans, a lot of people all over the world may only know about Madagascar from the movie, you know, the animated movie where you've got these lemurs and the fusa and all of this stuff. I mean, it's kind of become almost a bit of a joke because that isn't the reality for most Malagasy people. So why is it so poor in your opinion? Why is it such a difficult place to live? Why do they have malnutrition on an island that's much, much bigger than Mauritius, where Mauritius doesn't have malnutrition?
They don't. And you know what they have indeed, in addition to malnutrition, the twice I've been there, they've had plague, actual plague. And then from about in the last 20 years, they've had plague outbreaks of it every single year. And they have famine because of their major droughts. One of the things Madagascar is subject to is really foul weather, exceptionally foul weather, cyclones. But so is Mauritius to that extent. The difference with Mauritius is, of course, that they have preferential trade agreements with Europe. They have economic ties with that continent, reliable export markets, and that has made them, and then technology, they've moved into technology. Whereas in Madagascar, they still work on subsistence agriculture. They have political instability, which I've mentioned again and again, poor infrastructure, very, very poor infrastructure, and price fluctuations because they have subsistence farming, as I say, but they grow vanilla, cloves, coffee, rice. They grow lychees. You know, the trees are owned communally. It's interesting. The village goes out, puts a sailcloth underneath, shakes the tree, and there's their lychees. The one place I went to as an election observer was the second largest city, Tuamasina. Antananarivo has 1.3 million. Tuamasina has 350,000 people. And from my hotel, I looked out and there was a line of boats as far as the eye can see waiting to take the lychees, because this was now November, there was waiting to take the lychees to Europe, where they are, of course, a delicacy at Christmas times. So, you know, they have these things, but the price fluctuates. I know my son in Limpopo, he farms lychees, and poor guy.
The minute anybody owns anything communally, it's bound to be a disaster. We should have learned this from the Russians and the Cubans and everybody else.
Yeah. Nevertheless, they're a fairly communal people, and you know the thing about it. Visiting it, it is so beautiful to see, and it'd be very inexpensive at this time. Even we South Africans can afford to go there. That's how inexpensive it is. But they've had since the independence in 1960, they've had something like 11 presidents. It's not easy to give you a figure now because one of them was a president for several hours. Another was a president for 6 days until he was assassinated. But of late, the ones that I've had personal experience of was Mark Ravalomanana, who was a yogurt king, a big businessman, former mayor of Antananarivo. And he then came to power in 2002, I believe. And he, you know, that they have a constitution which limits 2 terms the presidential office, and not one of the presidents of late have worked through and served the 2 terms because they just change all the time. Now, Mark Ravalomanana brought Madagascar closer to South Africa. He visited just several times. And then ironically, when he was overthrown in a coup by Andry Rajoelina, who was another former mayor of Antananarivo, that seems to be the kickoff point to get into politics there, serious politics, a military coup for a little while, and then Rajoelina took over. And the 5 years of isolation and sanctions, you know, because African countries that do this are red carded by the African Union. And that was the case with Rajoelina's government couldn't work. So eventually he was brought to heel, as it were, and they had elections back in 2013, I believe. And that was a guy called Heri Rajman Arimam Pianini.
These names are not short.
And I'd love to reel off a lot more, but it's starting to get a bit boring. But he, both Ravalomanana and Rajoelina were unable to stand in that election in terms of the deal they made. And So Pianini, he was president for 5 years. Now, in the election in 2018, Rajoelina beat Ravalomanana in a runoff. And then the last elections were 2023 indeed, last year that is. And Rajoelina won again. He's a former DJ, by the way, and everybody calls him the DJ. And the opposition boycotted that election, and they had a turnout of 45%, the lowest in the country's history.
Wow.
They don't really have a free press there. They have they have criminal libel laws, which we had in South Africa during the apartheid era, which made being a newspaper man fairly hazardous. And they have other, restrictions on the media. So the people in power managed to cling to power by nefarious means. And sad to say, Rajoelina is selling the country down the river, letting illegal logging happen, and certainly rosewood, very precious woods that they have there. And he's taking, he's taking the blood shilling in a way from traders and dealers and so on. And we don't know where he's going to lead the country. We can't have Rajoelina there for much longer. That's for sure.
Wow. You almost feel like sorry for the people of Madagascar, not only because they've got a DJ in charge, which I wouldn't recommend having been a DJ myself, but also because this is such it's a tale as old as time in Africa and in the world, corrupt leaders. So how much of an influence does South Africa have on Madagascar? And what are our relations like at the moment?
Well, we've had very good relations. And interestingly, my good friend, Gert Grobler, who was ambassador to Italy, ambassador to Japan, he became ambassador to Madagascar at a very difficult time. It was a sort of a retirement post for him. And I was delighted to go to Madagascar many times and see him there. But he was probably one of our most astute diplomats. And I'm talking in the eyes of people before and after the transition. He was very, very highly, highly thought of. Well, the book I'm writing on Willelian Schlapo speaks highly of Gert, but he also says that he was very interested in Madagascar, and they went there. What they've done in Madagascar, they stopped all flights except Air France flights going there during the COVID outbreak. And, of course, he had to go as a former ambassador to the African Union. Schlapo had to go and try and persuade Rajoelina to let flights from South Africa in. He said, you want business with South Africa. You can't stop people coming here. And if you make them go to France first, then by that time, their certification on COVID will have run out. And it's just totally impracticable. So eventually they did overcome that. But there was a time where South Africa's embassy in, and that's not that long ago, was the only SADC embassy in Madagascar. So, we take the country very, very seriously. We see the potential, but some of its closer neighbors even, but certainly African neighbors don't seem to see it, take it as seriously as we do.
Well, I find it really, really interesting that you've given us some insight into this place, and it's not far away. It's what, like a 4-hour plane ride?
One and a half hours.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Very close. Yeah.
Even closer. So, yeah. JJ, we did an episode of Blind History some years ago now on Queen Rana Valona, who was a queen there in the 1800s. Fascinating woman. I'd encourage anybody to go and look that up if they have the time too. But thank you. Always great to catch up with you, and lovely to hear about Madagascar, this country that we should know more about, not that far away. And hopefully we will see an increased good relationship between us and them. Who knows? And maybe we may be able to save some lemurs.
And some prosperity too. There are various campaigns to save the lemur, and we should go. But you and I should pop along there for a meal. very nice food. And
you could do it in a day, right?
We could do it for a lunch.
There we go. All right, I'll have to go with you though, because I wouldn't know my way around. JJ, absolutely. Thank you so much. Always good.
Great pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, who also know a hell of a lot about Africa, and you should check them out if you're interested in learning about the opportunities that this continent can unlock for you, the things that you could learn in business that you could take to the rest of the continent and make enormous prosperity for yourself, not just for the country that you come from. You can do all of that with JBS, the Johannesburg Business School. This is Africa Analysis. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with JJ Cornish.